Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Still co-host Joe here today. Always a blast to be here with you all on this program, hosting for you. And appreciate you all tuning in, taking time out of your weekends. Then again, you might just be listening to one of the podcasts at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And in which case, this could be any time of week that you're listening. It could be the morning, Monday morning commute. So good luck with that if that's the case. But anyway, the Silk or Joe Show does come to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. And actually, by the time this airs, I think I'm going to be almost 5 years now that I'm going to be hosting this, that I'll have been hosting this program. So yeah, that's a milestone, isn't it? For some reason, five, just because it's not an even number exactly, but it's half of a nice even number with a big old zero at the end of it, right? So anyway, I appreciate being able to continue doing this program for so long. This weekend it is going to be the final 5 years since the final Silk and Antrim show, which I hosted anyway. So that's why. So for those of you who aren't aware of the show's history, it was titled Jane for a little while when it first started in 2013, in November of 2013. It's a very old show now. And, well, not very old. I guess old relative to the other talk shows, but anyway. So it started in 2013 as Jane, and then, somewhere 2017, 2018, it became the Silk and Antrim show. But then, in March of 2021, it became the Silk or Joe show. And that was 5 years ago, and this is now 5 years since the last edition of the Silk and Antrim show. So mourn the loss of that program and praise the gain of the Silk or Joe show, even though there's no real difference between the programs. Anyway, though, so we do come to you, though, courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So you can go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, find out more about that organization there. Find out more about their app at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Find out about the Alan Nathan Show, which I host several times a week now. AlanNathan.com as well is a great website for that. You'll find podcasts for that as well as articles, op-eds, columns by the late, great Alan Nathan, all there on AlanNathan.com. We want to thank the Salem Radio Network, too, for distributing this show, which can be found on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, X at Alan Nathan. And I say X at Alan Nathan because it's not our show, but it's, if you want to know if I'm hosting the Alan Nathan show or not, that's a good resource to utilize for that particular purpose. Anyway, so we got a lot of stuff to cover today, and unlike the Alan Nathan show, I never really come in with some sort of prearranged agenda to play off of. Rather, I just have prearranged rage from hosting the Alan Nathan show earlier this week. Uh-oh. I tried to load up a website, and sure enough, the computer decided that it was going to take me far away somewhere else. Anyway, I was just looking up the latest on John Thune and why I should hate him. So what's going on right now with John Thune? Of course, he's obstructing and holding up the SAVE Act. Just one of the most, you know, as I talked about last week on the show, it's just one of the most unanimous things in the U.S. It's close to unanimous as you're going to get with any issue. And John Thune is dragging his feet. The Republican Senate Majority Leader, dragging his feet, doesn't want it passed for some reason or other. But that's not the only thing now. Senator John Kennedy recently introduced a resolution to withhold the pay of senators during shutdowns. It passed the committees unanimously, but John Thune's also dragging his feet on that one, too. And John Kennedy, his quote about it is saying, "I chased him like he stole Thanksgiving," referring to how he's pursued John Thune over the matter. So Thune is, again, not representing anybody except his own interest and the interest of the Democrat Party, certainly not his state, not the people who voted for him, just his own interests, his own selfish, greedy interests. And as far as this resolution to ensure senators' pay is withheld during shutdowns, a little history about that. A lot, you know, I see a lot on the internet that, you know, people talk about, oh, yeah, they get to shut down the government, but they get paid still. That actually goes back to the Reagan administration. There was a bipartisan push in Congress to make Congress immune from government shutdowns, and everybody signed off on it. Democrats, Republicans, Reagan, I guess, everyone signed off on it. So that is why Congress gets paid. It's because of those, you know, Democrats that today's Democrats, actually, a lot of them were in office at the time that this happened. Joe Biden was in office at the time that this happened. He was part of the push. So a lot of Democrats today, but also even at No, that's not right. I was about to say even at the time. I'm going to say Democrats today and new Democrats who just came in are full of praise for the era of Democrats resisting the Reagan administration. But those are the Democrats who gave us this idea that Congress should be immune from government shutdowns. So not much to praise on that aspect, I believe. And it's heartening to see that it passed the committee unanimously. How often do you get Republicans and Democrats to agree on anything unanimously? I guess the problem is, though, what's going to happen with it next? How many Democrats and Republicans in the Senate are willing to risk having paychecks lost during another month-long government shutdown battle? Now, the irony, of course, is just how stinking rich these people get in Congress. You know, they come in with the salary. I know House members get $174,000 per year, but U.S. senators get that too. According to Google AI. But wait a minute, congressmen weren't paid as much as well. Anyway, so yeah, they only get like They both get $174,000 according to Google AI. I would have thought that senators would have been paid more, honestly. That's why I had to double check. Double check there, because I thought, wait a minute. Senators, there's not that many of them. Those elections are rarer. You'd think they would get paid more. But anyway, so both chambers get $174,000. My notes were correct. And I did come prepared for this segment. I just didn't come prepared to believe what I read. Nonetheless, though, at that rate, it stretches credulity to the breaking point, as the late Alan Nathan would say, to assume that on a salary of $174,000 per year in the D.C. area, you would be able to afford to become a millionaire somehow after only a couple of years in Congress, like Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, for example, or Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, for example. So, obviously, all these senators out there who are, you know, might be saying, oh, we should get paid during the shutdown our paychecks. No, they're not concerned about their paychecks. They have a lot of grift, graft, and corruption, which they get their money through. Or they were independently wealthy already when they came to Congress. They are not hurting for money. They are not going to miss that $174,000 for a month during a shutdown. Okay, and also it's $174,000 per year before taxes. Whatever taxes government paychecks pay. I know some do, which is weird to me why you wouldn't just take the damn taxes out beforehand. But if they have a month of a shutdown, that congressman is not going to miss $14,500, are they? So it should be a no-brainer to pass this thing. Because what's that congressman? It's not like, I know one congressman, the late Alchie Hastings, he might have missed that. He might have missed such a salary. Actually, is he late or is he just out of Congress? But he passed away in 2021. Okay, that was a while ago. Yeah, he had a lot of corruption. That's why I remember him. He was just so supremely corrupt. He was disbarred as a judge, and he was like considered one of the poorest members of Congress. So that's why I jokingly say that he, if he were still alive, might have missed that $14,500 per month. But the average congressman, they're not going to miss that. A month of shutdown ain't going to hurt them. They're worth millions. They're going to miss $14,000? No, of course not. So this should be a unanimous thing that John Kennedy put through in the Senate, this idea that the pay of congressmen and senators, or at least senators in his case, should be withheld during a government shutdown. Yes, it's a token symbolic gesture, but because of just how little that affects them, but still, it's the thought that counts, and it gives the public more of an idea that maybe these representatives are actually representing us and not their own interests. They're not such greedy money grubbers that even though they have millions of dollars to their name after coming to Congress, not before, they still claw every penny they can out of their paychecks. Yeah, it's not a good look, so at least Democrats in that committee had a sort of an idea of that. They had the self-awareness of that and voted to pass that legislation unanimously. However, what's going to happen now if it advances? What's going to happen when it gets to the Senate floor? Is John Thune going to take it to the Senate floor? Because another thing you got to understand is that just because it advances in a committee doesn't mean it's actually going to go anywhere. There are several ways to kill a bill before it even gets out into the Senate floor, and actually there is a filibuster that can happen right around that time period to stop it from coming onto the Senate floor, as opposed to, you know, the one that happens at the end to block it. There's also the one that blocks it from even hitting the floor. So that could happen. It could be attached to something else. Who knows? Its fate is not yet sealed. So all these people who voted for it, it might look good, you know, unanimously voting, and maybe congratulations, now you can say you stand for that or whatever if you're on that committee. The trouble is, it's an empty gesture at this point. Until retroactively, when the law passes, it will be seen as a good gesture. But at this time, there are so many ways to block it, and there's so much backdoor dealing. I mean, John Thune, the only reason he could possibly be wanting to protect the SAFE Act is if there was some backdoor dealing involved, or unless he benefits from illegal voting. So something like this, some measure like this, it's not a ultimately altruistic vote, because it can easily be blocked, and the senators know it can easily be blocked. And this could just be, you know, something to look good for them, and that's it, just a stunt. Anyway, we got more Silk or Joe Show after this break, so stick with us.
Tax season is here, and help is available. AARP Foundation's Miyoshi Moses shares how older adults, particularly those with low to moderate income, can access professional IRS-certified tax help absolutely free.
AARP Foundation Tax Aid is the largest free, volunteer-run tax assistance program in the country. With sites in every state, our goal is to ensure people receive the refunds they deserve without the cost or stress of paid tax preparation and with no hidden fees.
Tax rules change year after year. That's why Tax Aid volunteers are trained and IRS certified annually, so they understand what's new and what it means for older adults.
Many taxpayers overpay or turn to services they can't afford. Once you turn 65, there are new benefits you may be eligible for, and having an expert look over your return can ensure you receive every tax break you've earned. The deadline to file is April 15th, so it's a great time to find a Tax Aid site near you.
For more, visit taxaid.aarpfoundation.org.
Since 1946, PVA is the only veteran service organization dedicated to spinal cord injuries and diseases such as multiple sclerosis and ALS. Our size, our scope, our impact is really second to none. We're everywhere. We show up at your bedside. We advocate for you at Capitol Hill. We've advanced spinal cord research. We have pioneered adaptive sports. We've helped design accessible landmarks. And probably one of the biggest accomplishments of all is helping pass the Americans with Disabilities Act, which affects the entire disability community, not just our members. And they're not done yet. We just came out with a PSA, no paid actors. It's real veterans, real PVA members. I have a small role in it, so I might be a little bit biased, but they did a really good job with it. And it highlights, you know, accessible housing, adaptive vehicles, meaningful employment, family, as well as adaptive sports. So pretty much everything that we hold near and dear. For more information, I'd suggest you go to pva.org/power.
Hi, this is pharmacist Ray Solano with an important tip to save you money on your prescriptions. Imagine affordable medication and programs that get rid of the root cause of chronic conditions such as elevated blood sugar, blood pressure, and difficulty remembering your keys or maybe even where your car is. PD Labs Pharmacy is a special compounding pharmacy providing service, solutions, and access to on-site trained telemedicine staff available to answer your questions. Today, many people have discovered personalized prescriptions tailored to you with powerful results such as feeling better. Check out our website, pdlabsrx.com. Our nationwide coverage and 26 years in pharmacy allows us to offer medications at almost half the price of local pharmacies. Switch your pharmacy to PD Labs and experience the real service without the expensive bill. Call us at 888-909-0110. That's 888-909-0110 or pdlabsrx.com. Remember, you have a choice in healthcare.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Who's got more in common with a Trump supporter or radical Islamist?
Radical Islamist.
You saw someone wearing one of those red hats, chanting, "Make America Great Again," or you saw someone shouting, "Allahu Akbar," running down the breezeway here. Who would you feel more safe with?
The one shouting, "Allahu Akbar," yeah.
You would support the radical Islamist.
Yeah.
What is it about Trump supporters that you don't think you'd get along with them so well?
I'm gay.
But you would get along with the radical Islamist?
Yes.
And you're gay?
Yes.
In solidarity with radical Islamists, would you look at the camera and say in solidarity, "Allahu Akbar"?
Allahu Akbar.
And would you say, "Make America Great Again" in solidarity with the Trump supporters?
No.
What is a bigger threat to America today, radical Islam or Trump supporters?
Trump supporters.
I say Trump.
Trump supporters and MAGA.
Yeah.
I would say Trump supporters and MAGA.
As Christians, mm-hmm. and we're following Christ, do you think it's important to call out radical Islam?
No, because it's a freedom of religion.
Yeah, it's a freedom of religion.
How many terrorist attacks did Trump supporters engage in last week?
So many.
Just guess.
Thousands.
Hey, co-host Joe with you all today. So what you just heard, it was Caitlin Bennett. She's known for going around interviewing people on college campuses and the like. And this was at some sort of St. Patrick's Day event where she is going around interviewing various Democrats. And, well, you heard the tone and tenor of how those questions went. But joining us now for some reaction and talk about the threat posed by Iran and to talk about his book a little bit, we have Pastor Mark Biltz. He is founder and senior pastor of El Shaddai Ministries in Washington State. He's lectured at congregations and conferences in 12 countries on 5 continents. He's been on the cover of magazines and done numerous radio and TV interviews. He is author of 4 bestsellers, with his latest being America at War 2024 to 2026. Pastor Biltz, always a blast. How are you today?
Hey, great. Great. I don't know if blast is the right word.
What do you make of those people who seem to be quite welcoming of various blasts in that montage you just heard?
Oh, they're insane. They are totally insane. I mean, they're obviously college students who haven't learned anything at their woke colleges. Most of them don't even know when it says from the river to the sea, what river or what sea.
Yeah, and some of them too, like the Christian couple that was interviewed and said radical Islam, they have the right to be as they are. They were kind of older too. And then there was this one definitely silver on the head older couple that also said that Trump supporters were more dangerous than radical Islam. So this was most of them were college kids though.
Wow. Well, they're insane. That's all I can say. They're totally insane. Even within the church, there's going to be a big division in the church between those who support Israel and those who support wokeism mm-hmm. and radical Islam.
And just even though we've had 4 attacks in the past week, because this was just St. Patrick's Day, this was earlier this week, we've had 4 attacks at least this month, and all of them done in the name of radical Islam, all of them done by naturalized citizens, yet you have these people out there, they'd rather side with that, and you had that one girl who thought that 1,000 or more terrorist attacks by Trump supporters happened in the past week, even though none did. Instead, it was several by the radical Islam folks that she would shag up with.
Ridiculous. And most of the gays don't even realize they'd be the first ones killed in any Islamic government.
Yeah, that was particularly galling, the one lesbian chick who said that she has more in common with radical Islam because she is gay. It's like,
exactly.
Does not realize how mutually exclusive those are.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, what do they call it, Trump deranged syndrome?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just Republican derangement syndrome, because I remember hearing stuff like this, you know, before Trump was a candidate, back when Mitt Romney was the Republican candidate for president, and you can hardly call him any kind of radical, because, I mean, back then, in 2020, he's out there marching with the Black Lives Matter protesters, and he had hardly changed his views since 2012.
Right. Right. Well, this November, you're going to see lots of trouble between the ICE agents, the ones that hate them. I really would not be surprised if Trump didn't put ICE agents around every voting booth.
Absolutely, and he absolutely should, to scare off some of the illegal immigrants voting. And actually, just right before the show, I saw this clip, so I didn't have time to get it. It was either get that clip that we just played or get this clip that I'm about to describe. But it was Senator Chuck Schumer. He's on the Senate floor, and he actually said illegal immigrants almost never vote in our elections.
Yeah, it's probably because they're making the fake ballots.
But just it went from, though, they never vote to almost never, which is rather galling right there. And it just kind of, you know, OK, people almost never get murdered, but still we have laws against that. Yeah. Right. So we have precautions against that. So the head Democrat in the Senate to admit such a thing is rather telling.
So, absolutely. And so I think it's going to be fascinating. We may have a lot of riots like we see in Minnesota around every voting booth, especially if he stops mail-in ballots. But that could hurt Republicans as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, you just heard how brainwashed people were about radical Islam. So you know that crowd, they're, you know, the crowd that thinks that 1,000 terror attacks by MAGA people happened in the previous week, they're definitely not going to take any kind of SAVE Act shenanigans sitting down.
Right. Exactly.
So that then deals with expected strife by the end of the year. Now, your book, America at War 2024 sorry?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say your book, America at War 2024 to 2026, you know, kind of ends at the end of the year, which we're a quarter of the way through by this point, almost a third of the way through already. So what does this portend for the end of the year? It's not exactly the end of times. It's just the end of the time that your book covers.
Right. And everything in my book has come true. Every single step along the way has come true. To even the whole title was America at War with Iran. And look what's happening even right now at this moment. People need to get that book off Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happens after it? Why was 2026 the last year that you picked for it?
Well, that's where I saw how long this Iran-America war would take place. But then I think it could go global from there. I really think we're in for wars happening for the next 3.5 years around the world.
Yeah, because Iran, they do have ties with Russia and China.
China.
And it's often been stated that Trump, his moves with Venezuela and now with Iran are ways to check China's power. And China, certainly, they're not going to be happy about that. And then I think you have, well, because of how tied the Democrat Party is with China, as we've seen with Peter Schweizer's work from Breitbart, well, not from Breitbart, but reported by Breitbart, we see how tied the Democrat Party is with China. And so it's very telling when a Democrat senator came out in the last couple of weeks and said that Trump attacking Venezuela and Iran just gives an excuse for China to attack Taiwan and retroactively seems to justify Russia in Ukraine. So it seems that they're trying to say that because of this, Trump can't criticize now whenever China makes a move, which sets the stage for China to make a move.
Well, in my book, I said there's a good chance China could attack Taiwan by the end of this year. So we'll have to see if that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've been there was a little brief period, I think, where they had stopped military drills, but now they've resumed them kind of in that area. So that is something to not look forward to, but something to anticipate isn't even quite the right word either. It's something to be wary of China's actions down there, because will Trump's check on Iran and Venezuela stall them, or will China think now's the time to move before Trump turns his attention to us?
Well, yeah, not only that, we're preoccupied and all of our weapons have been used. We need to make more. China could just be waiting for us to run out of munitions.
Yeah, that could have been why China's, you know, not opposing the Ukraine war, because they know that we're sending all of our munitions to Ukraine. So even if we weren't going after Iran and Venezuela, they still had that timeline of attrition going on. But Pastor Biltz, real quick, 10 seconds left for our listeners to get a copy of America at War.
Go to Amazon, America at War, Mark Biltz on Amazon.
All right. Thank you for being on. And listeners, check that out. We're coming to a break. More Silk Joshua on the other side.
This year is for sure the year of the road trip, with so many epic reasons to get out there and go and experience World Cup or America 250 or Route 66 100-year anniversary. This is where I think RV rentals come in. They are the best way to offer you the most amount of flexibility for traveling. You can get a lot closer to the action to all of these fantastic events. I think this is where Outdoorsy.com comes in so nicely, because On the website, you can easily search and find the size of RV, camper van, travel trailer you want that suits the size of your family. It's a whole new way to experience these events. Don't forget to book early for both the RV rental and then also the campground or the stay. Involve your family. It's a lot of fun to plan together. Where are you going to go? What stops? What do you want to see while you're out there? And I always love my 222 rule, which is don't drive more than 200 miles in a day. Arrive at your destination by 2 p.m. and stay out there for at least 2 days. Come and visit us at outdoorsy.com. You can explore all of the RV rentals that are available on the site.
March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and it comes at a critical time as colorectal cancer is now the top cause of cancer deaths in people under 50. Dr. Paula DeNoia with the American College of Surgeons has more.
We're seeing an alarming rise in colorectal cancer among younger adults, but because of their age, warning signs like rectal bleeding or persistent bowel changes can often be overlooked or dismissed. These symptoms can appear months before a diagnosis, and regardless of your age, they should never be ignored. Everyone, even those without symptoms, should begin regular screening at age 45. If you have a family history of colorectal cancer or other risk factors, you may need to start even sooner. A colonoscopy doesn't just detect cancer, it can actually prevent it by finding and removing polyps before they ever become a problem. The American College of Surgeons has a new resource to help you know the signs and symptoms of colorectal cancer and when to talk to your doctor.
To learn more, visit facs.org/crc.
It's vacation season. If you're planning a tropical getaway to the Caribbean this spring or summer, the USDA has a message. Don't pack pork. African swine fever is a deadly virus that affects pigs. While ASF poses no harm to humans, travelers can unintentionally spread the virus by bringing cooked or uncooked pork products into the U.S. or from coming in close contact with infected pigs. USDA Epidemiology Officer Sarai Rivera-Garcia explains.
If ASF enters the United States, it could devastate the U.S. pig population, causing pork shortages, higher food prices, and billions in economic losses. As you travel into and between the U.S., Puerto Rico, or the U.S. Virgin Islands this spring and summer, please avoid interacting with pigs and shipping or packing any pork products to prevent the spread of ASF.
Learn more about African swine fever and your role in preventing its spread at www.aphis.usda.gov/stopasf.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Just coughing himself up a storm and finishing up an email real quick that I was trying to send during the segment, but I got during the commercial break. But I got a little sidetracked because my computer was acting weird. What a surprise! My computer acts weird. It's a Windows machine. I'm pretty sure a lot of you out there with Windows machines have been having some minor issues with them lately because of those very terrible updates that happen that lock you out of your hard drive or something. Just for those of you who had, I think it was a Samsung laptop with Samsung Connect, I just read about how you poor suckers out there had to find that you could not access your hard drive, which the computer often runs from. So, a bit problematic there, isn't it? But anyway, continuing onward, we have this SAVE Act that's before Congress. Will the Republicans act? Will they not act? It's a rather telling issue, I think, that the age of the rhino might be leaving, because John Thune, he didn't want to even get that darn thing in front of Congress, the Senate, but now it's getting there, and Senator Mike Lee, he is, my browser again. So Senator Mike Lee, he's out there pushing really hard to get that SAVE Act done, but it's not, he still has to overcome this burden, and it just begs the question and stretches the bounds of belief that John Thune is refusing to get the SAVE Act done. And why is he refusing it? That's the question that's begged. Why is he refusing to get the SAVE Act passed? It's like, do you not want a free and fair elections? Or what's your problem here? Why are you opposing it? Why are you fighting it so hard? Why are you fighting your own base so hard? Why are you fighting your fellow party members so hard? What's the problem here? Is it because Democrats promised you a nice, happy seat on the committee if they are, when they regain power, because Republicans didn't actually get anything done in Congress? Will that be it? But it is an issue, and where does it go? What will happen now? hopefully, by the time this airs, the SAVE Act has passed, but I doubt it, because Senator John Thune is very strong. And, you know, that's telling, too. I am so confident that the SAVE Act won't pass that I'm, you know, pre-taping this before the final day of the week is concluded. So, yet I'm very much confident that I will still be having this conversation, even though it's right in front of the Senate, even though it's a 80-20 issue that with only 20% of Americans opposed to the things inside of it. You still have just Democrats in general and certain particular Republicans who don't want it, who don't want fair elections, who don't want us to know who's able to vote and who isn't. You know, as I was talking in the previous segment, you had Senator Chuck Schumer come out and say that it's not a problem because almost no illegal immigrants vote in elections. Now, first of all, that's, as I mentioned in the previous segment, a total reversal from the standard policy of Democrats to say that it's a fiction, it doesn't happen, and you're a bigot if you say such a thing. But now he's saying it almost never happens, sometimes happens. Well, school shootings almost never happen, but guess what? We get assault weapons bans anyway. And assault weapons are almost never used, but we get those bans anyway, and Democrats want to ban much more than that. So almost never is, pretty, at least as far as Democrats go, is pretty strong grounds why we almost never have an insurrection and an attack on democracy in this country, yet Democrats campaign as if the country's voting system depends on Trump not getting elected or Republicans not getting elected, as if elections will be done away with if that happens. And then they do use that rhetoric for the SAVE Act as well, as if requiring people to prove who they are will somehow result in elections not happening. But Democrats, though, you know that they benefit from the fraud. It's the Republican holdouts that are questionable. What do they get from it? What backroom deals are they making with the Democrats to die on this position, to ruin their political career? Is it that John Thune feels that he has a real chance at being challenged in the 2028 Senate races, and therefore he wants the Democrats to give him some money to pile on and keep him in power? Is that why he's opposing it? What deal does he make? Is it because he knows that the Republican primaries are always rigged in his home state, and the SAVE Act would stop that rigging? Is that why he opposes it? Is it just because he's a mean person? Is it just because Trump supports it, therefore it must be bad? I talked with somebody on the Al Nathan show earlier this week about John Thune and the type of Republican he is. You know, he's the one where Democrats move stuff to reconciliation all the time when they were in power. Democrats want to get rid of the filibuster, have said they want to get rid of it, had said they will get rid of it if they resume power again. And as scared as Democrats have been of their base, we've been talking about this since a year ago, in fact. It was March of last year where Fox News first published their report describing how Democrat politicians are anonymously reporting that, yeah, our voters scared the bejesus out of us. Our voters want us to go out and die for them, literally, to fight the Trump administration. And that's the type of voter that Democrats are running scared of. And is it that type of voter that, you know, John Thune's running scared of too, perhaps, just in his own state that he thinks, or so what's going on with this SAVE Act here? Where is his opposition coming from? All we have is boundless and endless speculation that he is trying to help them. And the point actually I was circulating around is that Democrats, their base is so radical that they're scared of their base, you think that they're not going to get rid of the filibuster when they regain power? Is John Thune just unaware? No, he cannot possibly be unaware of the base that is motivating the Democrats at this time. He probably sees them in the street every day. He probably gets a bunch of death threats from them every day. If anything, he'd be running scared of them, too. That could be a motivation as well, as I just said, that he's running scared of them because of the death threats they're giving him. Who knows? It's not the era of politics for people like John Thune anymore, though. He's a dinosaur, needs to go. He certainly because he refuses to adapt. If he was adapting, fine. Then, you know, keep your job or whatever, I guess. Senator for a lifetime or whatever crap. There should be term limits, honestly. But if you're not adapting, though, you should really know when to back down, when to stand down, when you're not representing the people that you vote for anymore. Because it's not like you're entitled to that job. You can rig everything you care to in order to keep the job, but it's still not an entitlement. And unfortunately, voters just have a habit of just kind of forgetting what their politician does. In fact, I've seen this repeatedly over the years, you know, polling showing that Congress may have such a low approval as it does, but individually people approve of their particular representative much more than they approve of Congress in general. So I would assume that generality extends to the voters of South Dakota, where John Thune hails from, where maybe they are dissatisfied with Congress in general, but they think Thune is doing an okay job. Probably because they don't know any better, because they're scared of change, perhaps, or because there has never been a adequate primary challenge, because John Thune owns the GOP in South Dakota, and such things do happen, where if you're in I don't care if it's deep red or deep blue, if the party owns the state, then you're probably not going to get a real challenger to anyone who's in the party establishment, anyone, and especially someone on the level of John Thune. Like what happened with Ocasio-Cortez in New York City, where she overthrew an establishment Democrat candidate who had been with the party for a long time and served them well. That was a fluke. That's because the guy just did not take anything seriously. He was very confident in the system that would protect him, but the system decided not to. He was kind of out on his own. He didn't even campaign, really. And actually, that could have just been a failure on the part of his campaign, because you know, you still got to put your name out there, got to let people know what you are, and got to counter the rhetoric from the other guy a little bit. Actually, no, you don't. I guess the Democrat Party just decided that it was his time to go, because I'm thinking about the state of Virginia, where the Democrat governor candidate, she didn't even campaign, really, and when she was challenged with stuff on at the debate by her debate opponent, she hardly responded. And then the lieutenant governor in Virginia, the lieutenant governor is elected independently of the governor. Lieutenant governor didn't even show up for anything. She didn't do any debates. She ran one commercial, and she seemed like she was pissed off that she had to do even that much, that it wasn't just a coronation to lieutenant governorship for her. So that is how things work when you have a uniparty. And that's probably how it works where John Thune is. And unless he really does something to piss off the establishment, the GOP establishment in the state of South Dakota, his seat is safe. He doesn't give a damn. So that means that the only reason that he is opposing the SAVE Act is because of some sort of backdoor deal or attempt arrangement syndrome, because he seems to have a bit of that too. Him and his little pal Jeff Cornyn in Texas, I don't think that their runoff race has had its votes yet. Yeah, not that I've seen in the news. So we'll see how that goes. But Jeff Cornyn is part and parcel of this Never Trump group. You can go and see all sorts of reports about his Never Trumpiness, his Trump derangement syndrome. And yet he's coming from Texas, where some think Texas is deep red. Well, it is, but when you're deep red like that, again, the only way to get into power is if you're a Democrat or a Democrat-leaning or Democrat-sympathizer is to pretend to be a Republican. And the only way, and it just invites all sorts of corruption, especially when you get someone like that in and they realize that the party will protect them no matter what. Because what else? There's no other game in town. They don't actually have to justify their existence because there's no opposition party. Anyway, we got more Silk Radio Show after this break.
As NVIDIA GTC kicks off this week, SSD company Solidigm is thinking about where your data is stored and how quickly it can be accessed for AI applications. Greg Mattson, head of products and marketing.
If you're not thinking about storage, you're not taking AI seriously. As AI adoption surges, our data center partners are running into a real constraint: storage. High-capacity SSDs deliver improvements in performance, power efficiency, and density.
AI data centers have been investing heavily in high-capacity storage drives, and enterprise storage leaders are innovating with faster, high-capacity drives that support more efficient AI architectures at scale.
As the leading AI companies place more emphasis on storage infrastructure, we'll see the data needs of AI continue to drive the industry to all-flash solutions. It's not just a storage upgrade, it's a fundamental realignment of data infrastructure strategy.
Learn more at solidigm.com.
Hi there, I'm Morgan Freeman. March is Amyloidosis Awareness Month, a time to shine a light on a heart condition that is underdiagnosed. ATTR cardiac amyloidosis, or ATTR-CM. The symptoms of ATTR-CM, like shortness of breath, swollen feet or legs, and carpal tunnel syndrome, can look like a lot of other things. So ATTR-CM can hide in plain sight. Experiencing a different heart condition of my own has taught me the importance of listening to what's happening beneath the surface. Now I'm using my voice to inspire others, like my friend Larry is.
I knew something was off when simple activities left me more winded than they should have. Playing golf, hiking alongside my wife, and keeping up with my grandchildren started to feel more challenging. I spoke to my doctor about my symptoms and started treatment with Attruby, also known as acoramidis. I'm sharing my story so others know they're not in this alone.
Attruby is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with ATTR-CM to reduce death and hospitalization related to heart problems. Tell your doctor if you're pregnant, plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding, and about the medications you take. The most common side effects were mild and included diarrhea and abdominal pain. If you have symptoms that don't add up, ask your doctor about ATTR-CM and if Attruby may be right for you. To learn more, visit attruby.com/radio. That's attruby.com/radio. Brought to you by BridgeBio.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always happy to be here and appreciate you all tuning in this weekend. And I started the show by talking about how it's the fifth anniversary of the finality of the Silk and Antrim program before it evolved into this program. Well, we got another anniversary, the anniversary of an executive order calling for the dissolution of the Department of Education. Joining us now to talk about that, we have Dr. Carrie Ingraham. She is a senior fellow with Independent Women and has been featured in outlets such as the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, and the Federalist. Dr. Ingraham, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Yep, glad to have you. So it's a year now since that executive order was signed. It didn't call for the immediate extinction of the Department of Education. Rather, it called for the Education Secretary to slowly dismantle it. How's that been going?
It's been going remarkably well. I remember sitting there exactly 1 year ago tomorrow in the East Room of the White House as President Trump instructed Secretary of Education Linda McMahon to do everything lawful in her power to downsize the department. It's been highly ineffective. It's wasted $3 trillion of taxpayer money over the last 45 years. And he tasked her with that 1 year ago. Fast forward to today, there has been incredible progress. This is a huge undertaking. It takes time. But what we've observed is they are truly ahead of schedule. They are empowering moms and dads. They're getting control back to states so states can do what's best for the students in their states. You know, this is really designed in our country for education not to be federal. You know, the central mismanagement, it's proven ineffective. And so moving it back to state and local control and letting them fulfill their responsibility.
Now, it seems to have been proven largely detrimental because education standards and achievements before this was established were much higher than they have reached today after 45 years of the Department of Education's existence.
Yes, you know, what happens is you just get layers and layers of bureaucracy, more and more spending, but that money does not trickle down to the classrooms. So what we see in education funding is nearly half of the money that is put into education at the K-12 level, it's eaten up before it even reaches the school and the classroom level. And so moving those things out of the way, empowering those closest to the students to make the decisions, and that's where we're going to see innovation. We're going to see where education is more linked with preparing kids for their future. One of the things that has been so strategic this year at the Trump administration in the downsizing, reorganizing of the Department of Labor has been to procure the services of Department of Ed. They're procuring the services of Department of Labor because we can't do these things siloed or isolated. Why we educate kids is so that they're prepared for a bright future, to be productive, to be able to provide for themselves and their families. And so the Trump administration over this year has put together multiple interagency agreements, moving things where it makes more sense, collaborating. And really at the end of the day, what they're doing is they're preparing this future generation for a brighter future and one where kids are excited to be contributors. And education is absolutely essential to that. And that starts with the basics of teaching kids reading, writing, math.
And there's been a lot of pushback from that because people do not like change. There's for people who are concerned more about the bureaucratic side and the government soaking up money and the funding numbers as opposed to concerning about outcomes.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, that same day, March 20 last year, this executive order came out. Immediately, the teacher unions, their political allies, were fear-mongering, you know, that the administration is going to cut special education funding. You know, all of these services are going to go away. Teachers are going to lose their jobs. You know, just complete outright lies to put in fear. But it has really come up short, and the teacher unions have been exposed. They're the ones that got President Jimmy Carter 45 years ago to create the department. And so it's no secret what their agenda is. It's big government, it's money, it's control, it's pushing radical ideologies, have nothing to do with the education of the children. And so that fear-mongering has clearly proven false this past year, as no essential services have gone away for students. The department has not abandoned any of the promises or funding for kids with special aid. We look at the FAFSA rollout. It's been the best that it's been in decades. It's ahead of schedule. And again, it just shows where the teacher unions' priorities are. And they want that control. They want big government to really indoctrinate our children. And enough is enough. President Trump says we're going to get kids in our country learning the basics, because in the past, under the past administration and prior, we've seen that education is not linked with more spending. The improvement comes with free market solutions. And so one of the exciting things that happened this year as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill is the president signed into law the first federal school choice tax credit scholarship. We already have 27 states. Make that 28, actually, of us this week who have opted in. And so starting to bring in free market principles, empowering parents as the ultimate decision maker of their child's education with school choice, that's going to drive down costs, it's going to increase quality, spur innovation, and really at the end of the day, that is the best way for public education in our country to improve, teacher unions to lose their power and control, is to give moms and dads an exit option and let them be the decision maker.
That's absolutely antithetical to what the unions would want and what, you know, public school teacher members of that would want and public school administrators would want, because they're kind of paid by the student and they're judged by whether or not the students advance to the next grade level or not. And over the years, that has just led to this incentive to pump as many people into the classrooms as possible, not care and oppose any kind of private option, oppose homeschooling, oppose anything that keeps a student away from that public school classroom, and not to actually care if the students pass or fail, knowing that they will always pass, because that means more money and more success for the school.
You're exactly right. And Governor Doug Ducey, when he was governor in Arizona in his last year in office, he said in a State of the State address, union just articulated incredibly well what you're describing. We had teacher unions, political allies, historically stand in that schoolhouse door and tell minority kids they couldn't come in. Now fast forward to today, and we've got the teacher unions, their political allies, standing in that schoolhouse door and not letting families escape, despite absolutely failing to teach the kids the basics. You know, as one example, we see a district in Baltimore where not one child is learning at all, despite astronomical funding, and that's in 23 schools across their district. So we need a new day. Really excited about what's happened already to reorganize, downsize this department, and more is on the way.
All right, well, Dr. Carrie Ingraham, appreciate you being on the show. 10 seconds left. Where can the listeners find more of your work?
Yes, discovery.org/education, or you can follow me on X at Carrie D. Ingraham.
All right, listeners, that's something for you to check out, because we are done with you for this hour. I want to thank Dr. Carrie Ingraham for being on the program. I want to thank you all listeners for tuning in. And our website is MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.